Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the Runner's World Podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 25 of the Runner's World Podcast, the weekly podcast bringing you all the latest running news, views and interviews. I'm Rick Pearson, the Runner's World section editor, and I'm here with Ben Hobson, the digital editor. What have we got coming up on this week's episode?
This week we are talking to ultra runner and coach James Poole, who is going to be making the case for the long and slow distance training approach. And we also have our tech guru Kieran Alger in the studio to run us through the latest running gadgets and gizmos. Plus, Kerry McCarthy will be rounding it off with the weekly running news.
Oh, bumper episode.
Big one.
It'll be great to hear from James about why he believes mileage and time on feet are what matters. It's the exact opposite approach of what Brian McKenzie advocated on episode 23. As a reminder, Brian recommended a high-quality skill-based approach and said cool things like, we need to run quickly before we run long. Running high mileage with poor technique will inevitably result in injury, and lifting weights and getting strong can, to some extent, replace mileage when training for an endurance event. And James is going to essentially argue the opposite, so it'd be really, really interesting. So without further ado, guest of the week.
Welcoming to the studio, ultra runner, adventurer and running coach James Poole. James has an enviable running CV, including impressive finishes at the Western States 100 and a sub-2:45 marathon. On top of this, he's a running coach and the head of Advent Running, a free-to-join running community offering coaching, advice and, most importantly, craft beers to runners across the capital. James is a fan of long, slow-distance training and is going to be making the case for putting in the miles. James, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Thanks, gents. It's a real honour. Thank you.
So I started the same when we talked to Brian on about this. I said, what's wrong? And wrong is not perhaps the right word, but what is wrong with high-intensity, low-mileage approach to running?
Yeah, I listened to the podcast this morning, and he was very quick to shut you down with it being wrong, right, wasn't he? That was almost the first thing he opened with. So I'm going to be a bit alternative and say, yeah, I think it's wrong. I think it's the wrong approach for the vast majority of runners. And there's always a different way of cutting the cake when it comes to anything, and running is obviously no different. I just think most runners are going to benefit more from perhaps a more moderate approach than Brian would suggest with his sort of high-intensity Tabata interval-led approach. And I just think for most people, a route that's physically easier, that's less physically taxing on every single workout, and one that probably just makes them a bit happier in doing it, then at least more longevity leads to more repetition, and then hopefully a better running performance in the end.
What would you say to people who say that the kind of long, slow distance approach is junk miles?
Yeah, I mean, then that's the obvious the obvious response that everyone always gives, and it's also the same argument in cycling. And I think the difference perhaps between the two is that every time you run, you are pounding the pavement. Once upon a time before we evolved, we were in the woods and in the forest, but now we have to run on concrete and pavement, most of us anyway. And that's pretty hard on you physically. And so this idea that when you go and run it has no physical benefit is a bit of a nonsense. And so I think the other thing about junk miles is that they're only junk if they don't have a purpose. By definition, then they're useless. But if you value them because they add to your weekly volume, or they allow you to condition your body to pounding the pavement, then they no longer become junk. They're just an excuse for people who don't actually want to go out and master things. And by the nature of mastering something, you have to do it quite a lot to get good at it. And I think in the current day and age, everyone wants to run a marathon, win a race, for the gram, for popularity, without actually doing the hard work. And that's just the world we live in, right? Everyone wants instant gratification.
Yeah. Do you think Brian's approach cuts corners, James?
I don't think it cuts corners. I think it's wholly the wrong thing to do for people who want to run longer distances. And I think some of the stuff he talks about just factually scientifically incorrect and just not very helpful. I mean, the idea that he gives this idea that running fast leads to running further, quite simplistically, right? You build the strength to run fast, and therefore, because of that, you can run further. And he says, I think something like all these elite athletes, and he uses
Kipchoge or Farah.
Yeah, Farah is probably a good example. I think that's actually quite rare. And if you look back at some of the people who have won marathons and have run fast, Mike Gratton is an example. You know, he obviously won the London Marathon in 2:09. He didn't really have a history of 5,000 and 10,000. He wasn't representing, I'm pretty sure, I mean, Mike's probably a friend of the show and you can go back and check, but I had a quick look and I don't think, he was obviously a very strong runner at those distances, but he wasn't Mo Farah. Mo Farah is a great example of someone who is incredible talent, but most of them don't do 5,000 metre, you know, win the gold medal at the Olympics and then go on to be incredible marathon runners. That's not true. And so this idea that, you know, he also uses BMX cyclists make great track cyclists, and they do, because actually the two disciplines are very similar. It's not quite that common for BMXers to become Tour de France yellow jersey stage winners in reality. And because the two sports are actually quite, they're both cycling, and in this case both running, but they require quite different specifics, right? One, you know, sprinting requires fast twitch muscles, running for a long distance requires slow twitch muscles. And it's not that you can't, you have one or the other, you have a mix of the two. But doing an exercise that promotes fast twitch muscle growth for something which needs slow twitch doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, it's just doesn't make any sense. And then it doesn't work. Fine, if all these people, elite athletes, were out there using this endurance approach that Brian's suggesting, and they're killing it, but they're not.
Obviously, the high mileage marathon training approach is the most tried and tested of all time, if we're going to go for like obvious things.
Yeah, the orthodox way.
So what would you advocate for marathon training then?
Give us your week.
For my personal week right now is terrible. But ordinarily, when I ran 2:45 as an example, 2:44 in London a few years ago, it was pretty much 80%, as you mentioned, 80% with Brian, 80% of just endurance running, steady running, with a couple of speed sessions, maybe only one speed session a week, depending on how it went. But good volume, 100 miles a week I was running. And I think if you were probably to survey people running in that 2:30 to 2:50 space, you'd probably find that the overall volume, generally speaking, is getting between 80 and 100 and 20 miles a week. I mean, it's getting towards sort of elite level training. Yeah. It's obviously a long way from 2 hours, 2:44, but it's still starting to get to that thin end of the wedge, I think.
I think the best phrase that I've ever heard about this format is that each session is about improving your fitness, not proving fitness. Mm. So you're actually, I think that the notion that everyone needs to go and bank loads of miles as fast as possible just to show how great they are. Rather than actually, no, I need to be going and running at 10.5 minute miles, because that's easy.
Mm. Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Well, obviously the famous phrase is, good is the enemy of great. Right? Yeah. When I actually think that's around the wrong way for running. I think great is the enemy of good. And if you actually, Kipchoge is a great example. Mm. And if you look at his training sessions, they're obviously very, very fast, because he's a very fast runner over 26 miles.
Yeah.
But on an absolute basis, they're very fast. But on a relative basis, he's not doing anything particularly crazy.
No.
There's a coach, Renato Canova, who actually has a sort of quite different approach. And he sets his athletes some very, very difficult breakthrough type sessions that when you look at, you're like, if that guy's doing that, he's in phenomenal shape. Kipchoge is not really doing that. He's just being consistently good for forever. And now he's the best runner in the world, a marathon ever, I suspect. You know, certainly probably up there with the greatest of all time. But it's been consistently over many, many years. He doesn't race much. He doesn't get injured. He's just been building on these good sessions, not one or two great sessions. And I think if everyday runners, listeners, are thinking, I'm going to go out and kill it, once a week on a Thursday and smash up that session, probably you know, not the way to be thinking about things on a more holistic basis. And the better way to do it is to think, I'm going to go and run until I can do one more repeat and then not do one more repeat and finish with a, you know, a bit left in the tank, but don't get injured. Don't lose the, you know, don't get disillusioned by a, you know, a session that doesn't pan out.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about injury, James. Would you worry that someone who follows the kind of high quality, high intensity program is more likely to get injured than someone who follows the kind of 80-20 approach?
I think so. I think an 80-20 approach done correctly, and that's, you know, that's the important part. And I guess Brian would argue that his approach, a high intensity approach done correctly, would do with the same thing. But I think naturally we, you know, we sit down in an office all day, and Brian does make the same point actually, but it doesn't really seem to address it. I don't think is we all sit down. We, you know, often have lazy glutes, tight hamstrings or whatever. Everyone has their own problems. Everyone's different. But generally speaking, we're probably not as flexible as we like to be. Mm. But then you go and ask somebody to do a very intense session with poor lack of flexibility and lack of agility. And those sessions require really good technique.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, the thing he's asking, those sort of Olympic lifts and things are not something you just go into a gym and do, because you get injured.
Yeah.
But those sort of workout the day things that they do in CrossFit and CrossFit Endurance don't seem to have a lot of tuition in terms of technique. So you're sort of, combining these things. So not too much tuition on a very technique-driven approach, and then a vast level of intensity. I mean, Tabata, 20 seconds on, 20 seconds off, like super fast sessions. I think that's a recipe for disaster.
Mm.
But then you could also argue that, you know, long, slow distance, pounding the streets for many, many miles could also be the same. And I do think some strength and conditioning does sort of creep in there, but it's done slowly with the view that it, you know, it builds agility, balance, coordination, rather than, you know, clean and jerk as quickly as you can.
Yeah.
You know, all those things, which are power exercises. And I don't think people need the power.
I'd say that just to the point that you make, though, that these things are done under tuition. And I think that runners miss a trick, consider not thinking that they need tuition as well.
Mm, definitely.
100%.
Yeah.
I think people think they, you know, born to run, not the book, just the idea that we are born to run.
Yeah.
We just go out and do it. And I think, you know, obviously we were. And that there's scientific science that shows that, and there's these, all those people out there in South Africa who are running down animals. But you know, we live in a city, those people who live in London or wherever, and we sit at desks all day now. And we were born to run, we're not really tuned to run now.
No.
So some good technique on top of looking at it holistically rather than trying to smash out one session or beat your mates, you know, on park run probably isn't the best way to be a long-term sort of longevity in running, although it might be fun.
Yeah.
And I think to some extent the industry has built a lexicon around smashing it up, leaving it on the road, you know, killing it, which probably sells t-shirts, but isn't that all actually that helpful?
You're going to buy a t-shirt just saying, like, take it steady.
Yeah, don't go too hard right now. Save yourself for next week when you've got a race.
Long term, we've got a year and a half now before the big goal, so just take it steady. That's a great t-shirt.
Exactly, you get that.
Ease your way in.
Yeah.
Let's talk about strength and conditioning then, because it's not as if you're anti-strength and conditioning, James. That wouldn't be fair to say you think, just go out and run, it's going to be fine, just go slowly.
No, I'm not. And I think, you know, everybody's is individual, and some people need a lot of strength and conditioning, and some people
are really annoying and don't need any.
Yeah, or they just are already quite strong.
Yeah.
And I think you can. And personally, I don't do a great deal of strength and conditioning. I've been running for a long, long time, and cycling and other things, and I genuinely are physically quite strong. So I don't spend a lot of time doing strength and conditioning. But then again, there's always, with all these things, specific strength and conditioning for runners.
Yeah.
Not just. And this is, again, why this sort of CrossFit endurance thing doesn't really make any sense to me, because, you know, running is a single leg sport. You're only ever on one foot at a time. Yet I'm pretty sure most of the CrossFit endurance stuff, a lot of it is like, you know, two-footed powerlifting, you know, or heavyweight, lifting heavy weights on low reps.
Mm.
Again, not, it creates strength, creates muscle mass, and therefore fast twitch muscles, but doesn't create necessarily the sort of strength and conditioning that we actually need as runners. I mean, the good example is, you know, people, that person recently broke the world record for like 4-hour plank.
Yeah.
I mean, great, but like that doesn't, you know, that, you could have a great plank, but doesn't make you necessarily a great runner. Just because you're strong doesn't mean you're injury free. And it's just about doing the right type of strength and conditioning, and it doesn't need to be very much. And I think, you know, potentially some running drills at the beginning, a couple of times a week, is a good place for most people to start.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Do you think that that the high intensity approach is more applicable for distances from maybe 10K to 5K? Do you think that's more where it makes more sense?
I mean, it's just appropriate training for the distance you're doing. If you need to run 5K, then probably spending a lot of time running 13, 14, 20 miles on Sunday isn't hugely beneficial. I'm really saying really obvious things, but but maybe, you know.
That's true.
So doing 5 times 1K with a 60 seconds recovery or something might be very appropriate to run a better 5K.
Yeah.
And I think it's just about doing things that are appropriate to the thing you want to do and finding a way to ultimately to enjoy them. And I do strongly believe that the difficulty with some of these sort of intense workouts is they're actually pretty unpleasant. And I think a certain type of person likes that sort of the Rocky effect, right? You know, you pummel it until your arms scream and your lungs burst. And there's some people who like that. And they genuinely, for whatever reason, get off on that sort of approach. I think from being part of Advent Running for years and coaching people, that most people deal better with a little bit of that. Little bit of Rocky, but mostly a bit of like, that was tough, but I enjoyed it. And then they come back and do it again. And I think this is this repetition piece. If someone loves something, and the Advent Running sort of motto is fall in love with running, which is why we do things that aren't always driven around performance based. You know, they are driven around a reward that isn't a medal and a t-shirt and winning, i.e. beer.
Yeah.
thought I'd going to manage to get that in. And so it really comes down to doing something that people love and then repeating it and not getting injured and repeating it and not getting injured and enjoying it and then they, you know, they get this base or they get a level of ability that allows them to do a bit more, maybe add a bit more intensity to the thing and build themselves into lifelong runners who are passionate about the sport. And I think some of the short-term stuff is great if you want to smash out a 10K and then never run again.
So tell us quickly then a little bit more about Advent Running, James. If people are interested, how can they go and find out some more?
Yeah, I'd love to talk a bit about Advent Running. It was launched in 2014. It's very, very simple. In December, we run 25 days in a row, 30 minutes. Well, in fact, we do exercise for 20. When we first started, it was 25 days of running of 30 minutes. But not everyone can do that. And so we've broadened it over time. And it's now just do something, walk, run, yoga, cycle, swim. I honestly don't care. But in a month when your time is short, there's a lot of drain on your time you have. The weather's pretty bad. It's almost the worst month to do any exercise. You know, everyone's going down the pub. It's your Christmas parties. If you can find 30 minutes for yourself, it's a really, really healthy way to end the year. It's a really good way to start January on the front foot rather than having done nothing for a month. And it's fun, and we do it on Facebook and we give away stuff. And it's a genuinely fun thing to do. And it changes people's feeds in their social media into all these great photos of people doing their runs in the rain and everyone's sort of positive. And that's how it started in 2014. And it's just carried on as an actual physical entity now. And we run, we have 6 runs a week and get involved. We run with other organizations, so we have a run. We've just launched the Tenzing Clean Air Run Club, which is encouraging people to find clean air spots to do their workouts. We do stuff with Camden Town Brewery, as you alluded to,
the craft beer part. I mean, me and Ben could be tempted to turn up to that, couldn't we, Ben?
For sure.
but here's the brilliant thing about that: it's hill reps.
Yeah.
And everyone comes along. We have 80 people on a Wednesday doing hill reps.
The least favourite session of all the sessions.
No one likes hill reps until you tell them they're going to get a free beer, and we call it Hell's Reps because Camden have a beer.
Very good.
See what we did there?
You're wasted, James. You come over to the magazine.
but in all seriousness, rebranding some things that people hate into something, you know, even if it's, you know, it's not the world's best rebrand, I'll be honest, but it's not about, and everyone comes, and no one's obviously the fastest runner there or the slow, and most importantly, the slowest runner. So we have this great diversity of ability where no one's like, oh, I'm holding everyone up, and no one's like, I'm too good for this group, because we do a loop and everyone goes crazy for as long as they want to, and then we run back and get a beer. Creates an environment which is very encouraging for all abilities and doesn't, I think, focus on any one of those in particular. And I think sometimes particularly the new runner end of the running world is not as well catered for as the, you know, more performance end, where we're running, traditional running clubs have done an amazing job for in many cases over 100 years teaching people to run. They're not always, I would argue, the most welcoming of beginner runners, because they want people to run faster and win club championships and things. And we're not about that. We're trying to encourage people to go out and get involved and be better runners and be happier runners and enjoy it in the same time and encourage each other. So it's been going for since 2014. It's really cool. We have, you know, I see 400 or 500 runners a month, and that's pretty amazing.
It's great. It's great what you've done there. I think that's really,
thank you,
really brilliant. James, thanks so much for coming on the Runners World podcast.
Pleasure.
Great to hear a bit more about your training philosophy. And
hopefully there's some takeaways from some of the listeners, and we get lots more injury-free people not doing jump miles.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks, guys.
This is the Runners World podcast.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
We've had a couple of great emails from listeners. People are listening, Ben.
Yeah, it's been great.
So responding to last week's discussion about the rise of virtual running, Steph Harris from Cardiff writes, I like taking part in Strava challenges, but can't see myself signing up for a run that awards a medal for virtual running. Also can't stand treadmill running when the great outdoors is available all year round. Give me a small friendly trail run or an epic scaled road race any day of the week. I expect virtual racing appeals to people who may suffer from anxiety, though, and so more power to them. So fair enough from Steph, not for her, but can see the appeal for some.
Very good. And I think Jamie sent you in a nice little bit of advice before the North Downs Way 100.
That's right, yeah, Jamie Maker, yeah.
Yeah, he's done it himself, and he comprised a little list of things for you to bear in mind. So the hot tips for you, Rick, are recce the route, which I know you've done.
Done it.
So done it.
Tick.
Pace control and weather. Don't go really fast if it's hot.
Understood.
Great. Change of clothes.
Yeah.
Because it's a long old time.
Got my rhino suit for the second half.
Night riding. He's better at explaining this, but I'm going to just paraphrase. It's dark.
It gets dark.
Be careful.
Yeah, I've been out there in the dark once, so great. Tick, sort of.
And take photos, which is an odd one, perhaps an important one, which is to take photos because it stops you and it means you have a memory of the occasion, which when you run really fast and far, which you will do, often it blurs into one.
You're right.
So take a moment, have a snap.
Yeah.
And away you go.
Good. Great advice. Jamie, thanks so much for writing in. It's really nice of you. And if I can finish in less than 25 hours, which is what you did, I will be very happy indeed.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Next up, we're delighted to welcome to the studio Kieran Alger. Kieran's been on the podcast a couple of times before and is interested in the space where sports and technology collide. Each month, he'll be casting his expert eye over a different part of running technology with the aim of giving you a better understanding of how it could make you a better runner. Kieran, welcome to the podcast.
Hi again.
To mark this occasion, I have, of course, written you a jingle. Are you ready?
I am, I think.
We're talking tech with Kieran Alger.
Talking tech.
He's an awesome ultra runner.
Talking tech.
Talking tech. He's very charming.
Talking tech.
Knows his polar from his Garmin.
Talking tech.
That was Talking Tech there, Kieran, in honour of you. So no pressure.
I think I want that on my Spotify playlist now.
No problem. No problem. 50p and it's yours. Right. So Kieran, tell us what you've been looking at this week then.
So yeah, over the last couple of months, I've basically been looking at sleep and sleep tracking tech. I've become sort of fascinated mainly after having a child about how important sleep is for my own mental health and for running. You know, there's plenty of studies that sort of show the importance of sleep. A lot of the technology companies are now, they're looking at a way actually to make their products even more useful. So they've got the bit that you're tracked whilst you're performing, whilst you're doing the running bit, and they're now looking at what happens for all of the rest of the time to make you a better athlete, I guess. Yeah. So I have been looking into sleep, and I've basically taken three products. I'm using a sleep mat, something called a Withings sleep mat, and that goes under the mattress. It uses pressure sensors to track movement and breathing. And I'm also using my running watch, which at the moment I've got a Polar Vantage V, but most of the new running watches will track sleep as well.
Right.
And I've also got a bedside monitor, which is a what they call a non-contact sleep tracker. So it sits on your bedside table and it basically tracks your sleep using RF radio waves.
All right.
So I've been using all of those at the moment to gather all kinds of data over the last 2 months about how badly I'm sleeping. I probably should say how well I'm sleeping, but it's been bloody awful, to be honest.
Is this noted bad sleep, as in whatever would have happened, you'd known it would have been bad, or is this machines telling you it's bad?
Well, this is where it really gets interesting, and I think this is why I want to do this study. I mean, there was a recent report that came out, a study looked into sleep trackers and how they can actually have a negative impact on your sleep, because you worry more about what you're doing, whether or not you're getting enough sleep, and you can, if the data's wrong, you can misinterpret actually when they compare some of it to what goes on in a lab test. Actually, people are getting the wrong data. So it's been really fascinating, but sometimes it's really been spot on. Sometimes it seems to have been wildly out. So I'll give you an example. The best night's sleep that I've had, according to my Polar, I went to Runfest Run in a tent with a four-year-old. I had 2 pints of cider and I had a 96% perfect sleep with no mat, no mattress, just a sleeping bag.
That's what you're doing wrong, Kieran.
And that's
right. And your worst one was like at home, went to bed at 8.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, it's I think this is the point that I'm looking at here, is just to see actually firstly how these trackers vary and the kind of information that they're providing. So, you know, if you go into what you'll get, it will give you things like the time that you fell asleep. It'll give you the time that you woke up. It'll track when you get into bed and when you get out of bed.
Right.
It will also look at stages of sleep. So it can look, it'll reveal whether or not you're having lots of light sleep, deep sleep, and REM sleep. And the deep and REM sleep obviously are the most important for your overall recovery. That's when your body's doing most of its kind of repair, mentally and physically. Mm. And what I've noticed from these trackers very quickly, according to all of them, is that I don't get very much deep sleep at all. I'm a really light sleeper. I really want to look at whether or not I can apply all of the common advice around sleep hygiene that we're now seeing. You know, I mean, there's so much talk about sleep at the moment and about recovery that I think this is it's a nice timely thing.
Yeah.
And I want to see if, you know, if not having my phone with me, not drinking caffeine, not having sugar late at night. I'm a little bit guilty of eating a lot of chocolate around 10 o'clock.
Same.
Apparently that's not very good. It'll keep you awake, or it'll affect how well you sleep. You know, other things like, you know, I've spoken to a lot of coaches of the kind of professional athletes who recommend treating yourself a bit like a child. So you go through the routine of, you know, bath, story, you know, bed,
right,
and having that regularity of going to bed at the same time with the same process. And so I'm going to try and apply all of that one by one and then see if I can actually improve or if, as Ben says, it's just the way I am. But I'm going to do this, and hopefully I'll come back and be able to tell you guys that I'm sleeping like a baby.
Oh, we hope so.
I go to bed at this point, I switch on this machine, I have this supplement, and then I do this for 6 hours, and I slept really well. Yeah, perfect.
Right, let's talk about a couple of products, Kieran, then.
Yeah, so there's other things. So I'm often testing new kit, and there are two products that have really caught my attention recently. One of them is called the Power Watch 2, the Matrix Power Watch 2. Fascinating, because the one thing we all hate about GPS running watches is that they run out of battery.
Yeah.
This one never runs out of battery.
What?
Yeah, it's magic.
How come?
It's basically uses the difference between your body temperature and the outside temperature to that differential to create energy.
Wow.
With there's a special kind of sensor in there that does this. So you can convert your body heat difference between your body heat and the outside temperature into power. It's also got a little solar ring in the screen that kind of tops up that power.
Yeah.
But provided you're running in an area where that differential is high, so ideally you really want to be in the colder climate, skin temperature really hot.
Yeah.
This thing works better. It's a little bit misleading. If you use GPS, you can't run for in ultra track mode. You get like 60 okay. hours on.
Some of those things, yeah.
But I guess this will definitely last you for the 5 hours. But I guess the benefit really is that it doesn't even ship with a charging cable,
right?
Because you don't charge it. You just put it back on. If it does run out, if you were to do an ultra,
yeah,
you just put it back on and wait for it to recharge.
I think that's amazing, yeah.
Good. Which, you know, hopefully this has solved one of the big problems that we've had with watches for a long time, and, you know, the technology will be used elsewhere as well.
Yeah.
But, it's fascinating that somebody's got to that point. It's also just a standard you would get in any other watch.
It's incredible, yeah.
So the second one is a product that I've mentioned before on here. It's the Stride FootPod. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a power-sensing FootPod that has now come out with its second generation, and the big difference here, it does all of the things before where it measures...
Whatever it was when Kieran explained all about power.
Yeah, running with power.
Yeah.
But this one now also measures wind.
Ooh.
What kind of wind, clever. Kieran?
Yeah, exactly. Just the stuff that's out there for the weather, I'm afraid. But, it's been set up so that it can track the wind as you run, and that essentially makes the power tracking even more effective. So now you can gauge how much effort to put in regardless of the conditions. So before it was good at sort of flattening out the hill, so you could gauge the effort up a hill and down a hill. But now if you're running into a headwind, it'll adjust the power rating that you should be running at accordingly. Yeah. Or if you've got a tailwind behind you, how much effort you should use. And also, if you're really into this, I know, Ben, you'd probably like this a little bit. You can draw. It tells you how to draft people effectively.
Yes. Get a little closer.
Oh, good.
So, I mean, I've never done that in a race, and I'm quite new to that. But apparently, even if you think you're tucking in behind someone, you might not necessarily be doing it effectively. And this can help you really see if you are.
You've got to be good at it, though. Don't start doing it and everyone start kicking everyone else's heels.
I'm not sure about the etiquette of it. Yeah. But, you know, again, Stride is... It's a good product for people who want to understand how to pace effectively across races. But actually, I'd say, you know, it's probably more for people who are looking a little bit higher up the end of the sort of elite scale. You know, if you've got to be interested in the sort of the margins, I think, for this product. But really exciting
stuff. That is cool, yeah.
Excellent.
Am I right in thinking that you're gonna pose a question to fans of tech? But something that's puzzling you.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm always testing a lot of tech, and there are things that pop into my head and make me sometimes a little bit cross, sometimes I'm a little bit puzzled. And this one really is, it's people who pause their watch whilst they're running when they get to traffic lights or when they stop.
Mm.
I don't understand it. I don't understand why you do this. Because I'm hoping you guys can correct me and I can walk away from here with a new view. But that just skews your stats, doesn't it? It just means, you know, you're 10K, okay, I've run 10K, but I've paused most of that.
Yep.
It looks like I've run a faster pace, but actually half of that I was standing at traffic lights. Mm. My stats are wrong. They're wrong.
Well,
full stop.
But then you're talking, I don't know, it's more moving time versus elapsed time.
And that's another, I'm glad you mentioned that,
right?
Because Strava
are
now reporting moving time first on the app.
Yeah, yeah.
So for the race I just did this weekend, I ran for 16 and a half hours.
Mm.
According to Strava, I only moved for 10 and a half hours. I can tell you that the other four and a half was...
You weren't sitting.
I wasn't sitting. It was still hurting.
Yeah.
It still counts, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a bit of a legacy thing. I think that before auto pause and all these sorts of things, I think that people just got into the habit of pausing their watch. Because... No, I mean, I've been guilty of doing it, and then sometimes I've realised that there's, you know, what's the point? But I don't really have an answer to it. But I think that a lot of them is just kind of like, you've stopped running, so you should stop your watch, and it might be like stopwatches.
But it's not for a training, because what I was hoping to come in and someone say, well, no, this is deliberately done for a training reason, but
only if you were doing set periods of effort.
I can't see it being training. I think it's part of almost the same phenomenon of. There's some, you know, when you run a marathon, right? So you're never going to run 26.2, but you probably end up running, say, 26.5 once you've done,
right,
you know, moving around people. Some people take their time and say, oh, 26.2, and I'm only on mile 25 here. But that's my marathon time.
Yeah, but they'll also do they'll cross the line and see that they've done 26.8.
Yeah.
But then their 26.2, like, thingy is that, oh, no, but really?
But really?
It's a like, marathon. No, that's not your race time.
That's not all right. I'm with you, Kieran.
To be honest, I don't really know. I can't answer the pause, not pause thing. I think it's just...
Someone
let us know.
Let's open it up.
Someone call in.
podcast@runnersworld.co.uk. Let us know why people are doing that stuff. Kieran, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having
me. We'll see you again next month.
Yep.
And good luck with sleeping.
Thank you.
Yes.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
It's that time of the week again.
His fingers on a button, his ears to the ground. He's done a bit of Googling and he's had a nose around.
He's a detective wearing running shoes. Carrie McCarthy and his weekly running news.
We're delighted to be joined by Carrie McCarthy, Runner's World's own running detective, to bring you the latest running news. Carrie, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, afternoon, fellas.
So, what has caught your attention this week, McCarthy?
Oh, several things. First of all, I'm sure everybody has been following it over the weekend, but in case they didn't, it was the Anniversary Games again.
It was.
Yeah. Which is the London version of the Diamond League. It was a pretty decent performance. I'm just going to give a quick roundup of what I think are the highlights. I think our boys and girls did pretty well. In the blokes, Zarnell Hughes came second in the 100 metres. 9.92, behind South Africa's Olympic finalist Akane Simbine, and he beat Johan Blake, former 100-metre world champion, and compatriot Adam Jamili. In the mile race, Jake Whiteman came third in 3.52. I always love a mile race. Yeah. You don't get them very often, do you?
Yeah, yeah.
You get 1,500 metres.
Yeah. I think it's slowly coming back. But yeah, it's great. Dramatic distance.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Andrew Butchart in the 5,000 metres, he came fifth in 13.06, which was a PB for him, knocked 2 seconds off his PB, and that was a new Scottish record. And his missus, Lindsay Sharp, won the 800 metres. So I'm sure they celebrated with an extra long ice bath and an additional scoop of protein powder in their recovery shakes. Speaking of the women, Laura Muir's been at it again, smashing all comers. She did the 1,500 metres this time. She won it very, very comfortably. I just love watching her. She's just got that kind of like... She's got quite a, not the most fluid style, but when she goes for it on the final lap, she just grits her teeth and she really goes for it.
Her face is so expressive, it's the best thing to watch.
Yeah.
I can't remember which race it was, but she just came around the final bend and she just, the kick was accompanied with the most fantastic, like the face was going for it as much as the legs. I really like that.
Yeah. And what else? Dina Asher-Smith came second in the 100 metres. I think we've got used to seeing her win quite a lot, but she's still young. And she came second to Shelley-Ann Fraser Prize, multiple Olympic gold medalists.
Mm.
So I don't think there's any shame in that. And she said afterwards she was pretty pleased with her performance.
For sure.
A race that caught my eye was the women's 5,000 metres. It was highly competitive, won by Helen Obiri of Kenya in 14.20. Sifan Hassan, the new mile world record holder, who I spoke about last week, she can only come in third. That's what a tough race it was.
Yeah.
But our two British girls, Laura Waitman and Alicia McColgan, they finished halfway down the field in 12th and 13th place. They were just 11 hundredths of a second apart.
Wow.
In 14:51.78 and 14:51.89. But while that was quite an average day at the office for Alicia, apparently, she can go about 3 seconds quicker than that, I think.
Yeah.
It was a huge PB for Laura, whose previous best was 15:08.
Oh, wow.
So 15:08 to 14:51. That's quite something. Coached by Steve Cram. So,
God, that's a big old slice of time.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
So he's well done her. After that. Well done her. Indeed. Play. Moving from conventional track and field to something a little different. It was also the London edition of the Vertical World Circuit Series, which is tower racing.
Yeah,
basically running up and down skyscrapers. It is a thing. It's not just for crazy people. There's a series of 11 of them that take place throughout the year. The London edition was kind of the halfway point of the year, and it was at Broadgate Tower, which is a skyscraper in the financial district. 161 metres high. You think, I can't really do that. Is that much? Well, 35 floors, 877 steps. And there were two new records in it, a new men's record and women's record. The women's winner was a Brit, Sarah Frost, who did all of that in 4 minutes 40. broke the 5-minute barrier for that course for the first time, if you can call it a course, running upstairs. The men's winner, Ryoji Watanabe from Japan, did 3:41 and took 17 seconds off the record.
Wow.
I just...
You've ever done it? You ever go at this
time? I have actually, yeah. I did one up the Hilton, Park Lane Hilton.
Right.
Which I think was about 28 floors, 500-ish steps.
And what was this one?
This was 35 floors, 877 steps. And I remember I did 5 minutes something or other.
Yeah.
But my main reason for being chuffed with that was that I overtook Rhino from Gladiators.
Yes, get in there.
Who stopped to be ill halfway up in the stairwell.
Because there's a lot of handrail, isn't it? You have to use a you're allowed to use a handrail.
Yeah, it's all tactics. One stair or two stairs, go wide around the corners, swing yourself around on the banisters. It's just, you know, get your system and go for it.
Wow, there we go.
And finally, proving that age is just a number. It's a piece that's up on our website, runnersworld.com/UK, if you want to read more about it. Virginia native Roy Englert, who is a very youthful 96, has just obliterated the world record for 5K for his age group, which is 95 to 99. He ran it in 42:30.
Wow. Yep.
Which is, I think, almost 8 minutes quicker than the previous record. Yeah, but the previous record is 50:10 by a chap called Frank Levine. It's not a fluke either. Englert already holds the 95 to 99 age bracket records for 800 metres, 6:03, 1500 metres, 12:07, 3000 metres, 26:01. And he is also a member in the 90 to 94 age group before he crossed over to the next bracket of the world record relay teams for 4x200, 4x400 and 4x800.
It's a monopoly. It's absolute monopoly.
Yeah.
Well,
he's found his form.
Yes, he's found some very late season form,
hasn't
he?
He really has.
You won't be surprised to hear that when he was asked the secret of success, he advised everybody to just keep going.
Good man. Yeah.
Good advice.
Oh,
good
advice.
Yeah. 3 miles a day, apparently, on the treadmill, so...
Good man. Fair play. I'd like to still be running at 95, 96.
It's not bad, is it?
45,
your
I'll be
knees, your knees are already done.
Yeah.
No chance, mate.
Hobbo's retired at 37.
Well, Kerry, thanks very much, mate, for coming in.
Cheers, no worries. Pal. Thanks very much.
Yeah, we'll see you next week.
This is the Runner's World Podcast.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. I'd like to say a huge thanks to our guests, James Poole and Kieran Alger, and to Number 8 Studios in Soho, where this was recorded.
For more news, reviews, interviews, and much, much more from the wider world of running, please head over to runnersworld.com/UK. Please like and subscribe on iTunes, and thanks to Acast, our hosting partners. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.